बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी। गोपी जान बाला गिरिभार हरी। गोपी जान बाला गिरिभार हरी। यशोर नंदन जन राजन जोर नंदन जन राजन जामुन चेहरा मन छाहे। जामुन चीरा बनचारी। हे राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जान बाला गिरिभार हरी। यशोर नंदन व्रज जन राजन यशोर नंदन व्रज जन राजन जामुन चेरा बन चारी। जे राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन बाला गिरिभार हरी। यशोर नंदन व्रज जन राजन जामुन चेरा बन चारी। जय रुक्मिणी द्वकदिश रुक्मिणी द्वकदिश रुक्मिणी द्वकदिश जय रुक्मिणी द्वकदिश। हरि बा हरि बा हरि बा नित्य गौरि बा। जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद। जय ओम विष्णु भव महम दुर्गचार तुलसी सिमारि दिवाइन ग्रेस इस्कान फाउंडर चार इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी जी प्रभुपाद की। जय ओम विष्णु भाव महमद प्रकाचार सीसी मानी दवाई गई शीर भक्ति सिद्धांत सरसा श्री को महाराज की। शीर रमचाद हरिराष्ट्र कौर की। प्रेम से हो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री सुद्वैत ग्रहार श्री वासुदेव गो भक्त बिंद की। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण साइम सुंदर राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की। वृंदावन धाम की मथुरा धाम की नवद्वीप धाम की त्रिमुर माई की गंगमाई की Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samabeda Bhakti Vindi ki. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Om Magnate Miranyasya Kena Jena Shilakshaya Shakshu Viliram Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudehi Namaha Sri Chaitanya Namo Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Drati Sabhidanti Kam Namo Vishnu Varaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivisesa Sunjavari Paskata Dezatarine Panta Kapata Rubjasta Kripa Sandhu Devata Patita Nambapa Vivyo Vaishnava Vivyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhareta Garadha Sivasri Go Bhaktavindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, 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 Hare. It's gone from the child of Srila Prabhupada Ki. It's a little late, so I'll just make a few comments in relationship to our performance we just saw. Because we had a chance to be wonderfully entertained by the children performing yoga, as well as reciting the prayers, the samsara prayers, the prayers to the spiritual master. A few people may be new. Here we're practicing bhakti yoga. There are different types of yoga. Yoga means to link. Everyone is in some way trying to link up with something. Either the Shakti or the Shakti Mam, the energies or the external manifestations of the Lord. Basically, material life primarily means that people are turning their backs on the spiritual world, turning their backs on Krishna's eternal leelas or pastimes. And so yoga is the idea of how to link up and try to once again address and hopefully to participate in such pastimes. But people can try to link up very directly, or they can go in a very circuitous or an indirect way. Bhakti is the process of how to, once again, to become a very deep lover. The highest level of love, selfless love, is in connection with first honoring who or what is the self. The highest aspect of love goes beyond just the physicality. Because we realize that the externals or the physical is just that. It is temporary. It's transitory, and it's something that we're using. Unfortunately, most people are being slaves of their senses rather than controllers or masters. So there is the hatha, some of the exercises we were seeing. It has a lot to do with how to allow the body to become a better instrument for higher consciousness, for better health, for longevity. Some people practice hatha for beauty. But ultimately, to be able to be more in control of the mind and the senses. There is karma yoga, which has a lot to do with understanding the universal principles or laws that govern the individual, that govern the universe even. As there are certain distinct universal laws that are common to all humankind, all species, all forms of life. And most times people try to deny such universal laws. We understand that when people break laws, they're lawbreakers. They're not good citizens. They're not good participants in whatever the rule of law is governing. Sometimes we know that laws are unjust, or sometimes we see people are not honoring justice themselves. Obviously, the highest and the most auspicious beneficial laws are those that are given by the highest
or the object of law, or the highest legislation, that is ultimately the supreme, that is Krishna, that is God. And when laws are just, they're designed to help us to be able to be better persons. So just as there's material laws, there's secular, there's national, international, there's also spiritual laws that are much more important to take notice and to follow, and much more difficulty or much more chastisement, much more inauspicious things happen to one when they go against such natural laws. There is a karma, and then there is astanga, many categories of integral and raja and so many other types of yoga that deals a lot more with looking more at the prana, the energy within the body in connection with the mind. So there's more focus on trying to acquire a certain level of higher consciousness in connection with trying to become a part of the enjoyment of higher cosmic awareness, or the Brahma Jyoti, the effulgence connected with the spiritual world, connected with the Lord, with Krishna. And there's jnana, where one is trying to understand so much based on intellectual manipulation, intellectual conceptualization, where one is trying to codify and perceive things in such a way to understand the dynamics of how things are related. But obviously there's a limitation there, because it's so much in trying to experience something based on one trying to experience within his or her capacity. But bhakti has more to do with not just trying to grab something, to experience something based on our limitations, but how to let that which is sublime and divine descend upon one. So this is the science of love, of devotion. And so Krishna consciousness is rather inclusive, because it includes all these other aspects. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving all these different aspects of knowledge, but ultimately mentioning about the platform of Sharanagati, or full surrender. In most languages in the world, surrender is a nasty word, it's a bad word. It usually means to be imposed upon, to have to give in. It means to give up one's individuality. It means to be forced to conform, and so many other negative things. But in bhakti, surrender is the ultimate aspect of the loving connection, because it's just like the little child who just runs into his mother or father's arms, or runs into the caretaker's arm, and therefore there is full protection and concern. And so we are trying to surrender, that we're trying to become fully absorbed in the wonderful culture of devotion and love. It's full of knowledge. But we're trying to shed so much superfluous things that are incarcerating us and bringing so much acculturation that's minimizing the soul, which is Satyadananda Vigraha, which we know is eternal, and it is full of animated love and bliss, and it's eternal. So ultimately, yoga is to help us to understand the eternality. It's to help us to understand who we are, and to connect with what our ultimate duty and joy and activities are. And then we saw that they were having these wonderful prayers they were sharing with us to the spiritual master. And so one may wonder, well, why so much emphasis? And why like these small children so focused on these prayers? And this may seem quite unusual based on, you see, modernity. Well, in Krishna consciousness, we're not so much interested in modernity or antiquity. We're not so excited about what is new, what is contemporary, or we are stuck in what is ancient. We're very much concerned with what is essential to our identity as spiritual entities. What is essential to our ultimate needs and desires, and that is, of course, in connection with the Supreme. So where there is modernity that can help us to realize who we are, can help us to acquire Atma Vidura self-realization, we are excited. And where there is antiquity that helps us to embrace that, we are excited. And so our children that we just saw, it was so wonderful. First we saw that they were all different ages. The yoga was, it was just much as exciting of seeing the older children do their asanas, as well as the little girl. Because she was as involved as the others, as a creative expression and sharing. It was nice to see the dancers also, quite some different age. Because this is culture. Culture is that each generation is to feel valued, is to feel that they have a significant part to play and they're being accountable to play that part. And that they're having association, they're having sadhu sangha, they're having friends. We all need friends to confide in. We need role models to inspire us, and we need mentors to guide us. So there's a huge problem in today's society when it comes to education. In America now, on the average day, over 150,000 weapons are brought in just into the public schools. That children are just being bathed or drowned with a diet of violence. The average person in America is watching TV about 6 or 7 hours a day. And how much impact that has. We're constantly having a diet of promiscuity, a diet of violence. And so it is very dangerous to have education that is void of character. It is dangerous to have education that doesn't give a greater sense of values, education that is void of spirituality. Otherwise, we will create sophisticated, practically animals, where people will become very sophisticated in how to be abusive, manipulative, and exploitive. People will be very sophisticated in just how to pursue their own particular sovereign sense gratification desires. That's animalistic. Animals are very territorial conscious. So they're very, very often very sectarian. Sometimes the humans are even more sectarian than the animals. And so we see this massive animalistic consciousness, massive fragmentation, racism, tribalism, excessive genderism, and religious fanaticism. And so much of the beauty is in fragmentation. It's fragmenting. Because people are not having the proper sense of education. And it starts, of course, not only with the children, but it starts even before the child comes out of the womb. So much of the character is already formed while the entity is in the womb. Just as in our Vaishnava culture, in Vedic culture, there are samskaras. And so everything is done as part of spiritual science. Especially things that are most important. And such things that are most important is mating. And in any society, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing or defending. But even these things in spiritual science are done, or culture, are done in such a way to elevate one's consciousness. So the child in the womb is often has been invited, not based on love, but based on violence. So that will affect the quality. And then while the child is in the womb, often the child is hearing all kinds of unhealthy conversations, is being brought into all kinds of unhealthy environments. And so by the time that many children come out of the womb, they're already at a deficit. Because they've been summoned, not based on love, not based on real sense of caring, but they've been summoned mainly, or they've come as an accident. So there can be a big difference in the kind of soul that's drawn into the womb, who is coming by accident, rather than being lovingly invited. As such Preparation is there. Because where there's culture, then everything again is part of community and is done in such a way to give the highest level of benefit based on such. And so we try in Krishna consciousness to honor each generation, each gender, each person in general, in such a way of honoring the fact that we are spiritual entities who happen to have white body, black body, woman's body, man's body, different combinations, but the soul is the same in each of us. And we all have certain similar needs that helps to make up our human existence. And as more and more in the world people are able to honor these similarities, where we are able to have a great sense of unity while we honor the diversity. Force, unity is just unhealthy conformity. And lack of unity or excessive individuality is just anarchy. So society needs to be able to honor each institution, each family. Because the family is a microcosm of the race, the nation, of the world. And so as there is a healthy honoring based on the spiritual paradigm, then there is very beautiful unity with diversity. The world is in a state of alarm. And one of the major issues is that religion itself is on trial. And in many cases, God is on trial. Many people are seeing some of the greatest conflicts have a religious orientation. And many people are seeing how fanaticism is increasing in so many, many places in the world. It's creating terrorists, it's creating ethnic cleansing and all kinds of things. And so for many people, they're thinking, what is all this religious stuff? It's just bringing so much inhumanity to humankind. Many people are thinking, if all this religious rituals and absorptions and the fixations were not there, then people could be more genuine. But it's not that there is something that's wrong with religion or deep spirituality. There is something wrong with people. That there are different people and different mindsets, influenced by different modes of nature. And you have some people who are what? Who are empowered for destruction. Buddha Bhava Samambitaha. You have some people who are empowered in a sinister way. And these people, they may take involvement in commerce and education. They may hide in politics, or they may hide in religious institutions. And so here we're looking at just devious people who try to find arenas to exploit, to manipulate, and to find ways to engage in hidden types of agendas. So because religion is so powerful, religion is one of the most powerful, energizing, activities to humankind. People can do all kinds of things, be empowered in the most amazing, wonderful ways due to their religious associations, affiliations, and inspirations that comes from that. And at the same time, people can justify the most heinous type of activities as they consider that they are God-blessed or inspired by some conception of divinity. And so religion is on trial, in as much as, especially in America, anything that looks different is more now being investigated than any other time. The world made a big change, and America made a big change on September 11th. And so in one sense, that is very good, because it now is a wake-up call to religious people to be authentic and to engage in one's theology in such a way that it shows that it is beneficial for humankind, not just beneficial only for the person, only for the people who do whatever that religious theology is. Because if it is deep religion, that is not just something that benefits only the person or people who involve themselves in it, but it benefits especially those who embrace it deeply, but it also has its effects because of its potency. When something is potent, it has influence on the environment. The big issue in today's society is not drugs, it's not crime, it's not resource depletion, it's not AIDS, it's not these things. These things are secondary. The real issue is that there's impotent spiritualists. Especially when the priestly class become impotent, then all kinds of massive unhealthy things begin to fall on the people. Because it is the priestly class's duty to be able to have and embrace the spiritual culture, to be role models, so that it encourages more people to take advantage of such, and that their involvement by honoring the Shastra or the religious scriptures gives people great indicators of what one should do, how they should engage, and when they should engage, and why they should do various things. Now everything is so much based on just relativism. And life is not just all based on relativism. Yes, diversity is there. But it's based also on people having goals and being able to have teamships and being able to unite and being able to have a common shared vision about how to create the greater good for the greatest number of people. And that happens by understanding what is the most essential needs of the people and understanding what are the people. Are we these bodies that we have? No. We may happen to be using a particular body at this particular time. And even each of our bodies, physical body, is so much connected with our subtle body. And our subtle body has all kinds of integrations because we have been so many different things in different lifetimes. So what we normally call who we are is a composite or an amalgamation of so many different personalities from previous lives, and there is some dominant consciousness that's a part of that that's coming forth now. And so, of course, Krishna consciousness is about how ultimately to rise above all material bodies. Because all material bodies, they grow old, they get sick, and they die. And if one has not sufficiently raised their consciousness, then they have to take another body or another prison suit. So it's not just only our Vedic scriptures, but all major religious scriptures emphasize that we are greater than just this existence. Matter of fact, three major things constantly appear as we examine bona fide religions. First is that there should be Sharanagati, full surrender to God, giving one's mind, body, soul in the service of the Lord. And that doesn't matter. We're talking about Buddhism, with Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, etc. The major emphasis first is the idea is that one is to engage in, we say, Sharanagati, full surrender. And two is that we say that one should be the servant of servants, or one should love one's neighbor as oneself, or we say even love one's neighbor even more than oneself. And this is, again, a theme that is quite consistent. And the third theme is that this world is not our home. And what major bona fide theology it is, it talks about it, heaven, paradise, the kingdom, emphasizing that there are greater treasures, that there is a higher existence, and that that can be gradually experienced as one is acting in the day-to-day way and being able to practice what ultimately one can attain. Why the idea of love your neighbors yourself, it means now practice being loving, practice being selfless till you begin to become that in full, where one can then transcend the realm of limitations, the realm of duality, the realm of karma or lust, and be able to enter into the divine realm of prema or of love. And so no bona fide theology says this pie in the sky, you do whatever you want to do now, and then you enter into the kingdom of God. Or you just put everything on hold and you just live for the future. But as there is proper honoring of Shastra in connection with the example of bona fide sadhu or saintly people, under the guidance of guru or spiritual mentorship, as these prayers we were listening to, emphasizing the importance of guru. Everything we do, it involves some level of mentorship. Intelligent people never try just to do everything themselves. Many people may want to be very independent and want to do what they can only themselves. Anybody's vision or aspirations is something they can do only for themselves. That's a small, myopic type of vision. Intelligent people are selective about who they may get advice from or even who they may associate with. But they understand the importance of receiving some information, some knowledge, some care, some guidance, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel, so they can use what they are getting to help themselves to be better. And so the idea of spiritual master is not to be docile or to be a blind follower and not to want to think for oneself, but just to have someone to dictate something to you. No, the idea is being hungry for growth and for knowledge. And being so hungry that one is trying to be attentive to be able to use what is available so that one can own that and have the experience that's associated with being a high achiever or being able to be freed from the mold of material nature. So in Krishna consciousness, there's an intense emphasis, as we saw in these prayers, of the guru or the student receiving information, guidance, etc., because there is this strong hunger to grow and to excel. There's this great hunger to do the right thing. There's this great awareness of the dangers that are associated with so much of modernity. And there's awareness of the goals that are accessible. And so you'll find that people who excel very highly, that they are inspired by very powerful role models. And they may have been in touch with very powerful mentorship. We've got the best architects, sports people, musicians. In most cases, you'll find that there was in strong, intense individualism or greed for trying to become that. And there was strong attention looking at others who have become that or who have excelled so that they can understand and become of high quality themselves. So we try to look, in conclusion, we try to read these wonderful books. It just gives us so many prescriptions and understandings about how to minimize so many of the complications associated with just struggling in this material prison. We try to take great notice of the great saintly personalities because they are showing us, according to Desha Kalapatra, time, place, and circumstance, what is the most healthiest thing to do. And we try to honor the samskaras because we want to engage in maintaining body and soul together, but in such a way that we are using the body and offering it to the Lord. We're using the mind and intelligence so that we are more in control of them and they're not making us a slave of such. And so it starts particularly with the youth. I think in the world now, about one-third of the people in the world are children under 19 years of age. In many cases, that's growing. But so important, as sociologists and psychologists understand, what happens at these earlier times in our life has such an effect on our futures. So many people are struggling because of some many unhealthy things at such a young age. And so many people have excelled in the most amazing ways due to healthy encounters and experiences at such a young age. And this is why in the Vedic and Vaishnava culture, there is so much spiritual scientific processes of how to get the maximum amount of benefit based on what that particular activity is. And so we have the samskaras for when one is wanting to have impregnation. Some scars at birth, some scars first day going to school, first eating first solid food, grain, first cutting of hair, marriage, and of course on into transcending the body into death. And so as such things are done, the spiritual science then the full benefit is there. Let me end with just one short story. There was one in the Vedic scripture. There's a story of one devotee named Sri Sarangadev. And Sri Sarangadev was existing at the time that Mahaprabhu was on the planet, Lord Chaitanya. And he was very austere, lived very simply, basically did everything himself, his washing, his clothes, cooking, his preaching, everything, basically did pretty much by himself. So once Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, visited him and suggested to him, what we should say, requested that he would take disciples, that he should become a guru himself. He was not interested. He told Lord Chaitanya, you know, this is Kali Yuga, and after all, who, you know, this age, after all, who's really qualified to be a disciple? And furthermore, what is the need for disciples? One being guru, this can produce great ahankara, false ego, so many different things. What is the necessity? And Lord Chaitanya told him, you are more than qualified to be able to make others qualified. That you are not the kind of person who is claiming proprietorship that will have any kind of disturbance based on taking this kind of service. So Lord Chaitanya wanted him to be able to even do more service, and so therefore, by him having students and also engaging in helping others, this would expand the movement of bhakti. So he, seeing Lord Chaitanya's desire, understanding it, agreed that the first person that he would meet the next day, that he would make that person his disciple. Didn't matter who it was. So Sri Sarangadev was very strict in his sadhana, and he rose very early and was engaged in his puja and his meditations. He was taking bath in the Brahma Muhurta time. And as he was bathing in the Ganga, this corpse was floating down. And he remembered that he had said the first person who he saw is going to make a disciple. So this is the kind of potency that he had. So he pulled the body, the corpse over, and he chanted mantra into the ear. And by chanting mantra into the ear, he literally brought the soul that had left that body back into that same body. This is also a siddhic power that some of the demigods have, and some yogis as well. Sometimes the Christians, they think, oh, you people are in your religion, but only Jesus has brought the dead back to life. No, they do not understand. Even in their own tradition, Ezekiel, also Elijah, they brought back the dead back to life. Yogis can do this, and we see in different pastimes that this has happened in Vaishnava culture. So he brought that entity back into the same body. But when the entity was brought back into that particular dehi or body, he came back with so much integration of higher consciousness, because he was in tune now with his previous lives, even something of the future. And so now, here Sri Sarangadev had made this promise to Mahaprabhu that whatever person he saw that next day, he was going to make that individual his disciple. And so as he chanted the mantra and revived this entity, brought the soul back into the body, and then of course this was a young boy who then became his disciple. So the parents had heard that their son, who had just died that previous day, had been revitalized, brought back to life. And they, of course, they were overwhelmed. They came to reclaim their son, but he was fixed in just wanting to be with Sri Sarangadev and to assist with him as his disciple. So in conclusion, we discussed today is we have a wonderful children, some of our children who gave these nice performance of yoga, And also performance of sharing with us some reflections on the samsara, prayers to Guru. And so we're discussing how the different types of yoga, how Krishna consciousness is ultimately about bhakti, and what is the nature and the nature of the bhakti. It's inclusive, but ultimately it encapsulates the yoga of love. And love is not something that is sentimental. It is the highest expression of the soul. And so ultimately, spiritual life is about once again becoming a deep lover or falling back in love with the divine couple. That material body means we turn our backs on the eternal leaders of the Lord. We turn our backs on the spiritual world. And now we are engaged in trying to master the world of limitations. And so the great devotees have entered into these hellish environments to tell us basically, jiva jago, to wake up. If we have to epitomize so much of the message that's given to us by the great acharyas, Acharyavan Purushoveda, they're letting us know, once again, become natural. Give up this amnesia that we have associated with for so many, many lifetimes. So they're really helping us to once again to reclaim what is ours eternally that is now somewhat in a dormant state. And so then we looked at some aspects about the intensity of the guru-disciple connection, why they gave this performance of in such way, is this is natural to life itself. That intelligent people are always interested in trying to take notice, to be cognizant of those who have excelled, taking notice of those who are a little more astute in certain areas so that one can internalize something from their examples. Intelligent people are eager to have to connect with mentorship. They're just selective and being careful about who or where they repose their affection and their attention. And so we look at the state of affairs that education has so much to do, should have a lot to do with character. And that much of the dilemma in today's society is because of the lack of proper parenting, of the lack of proper educating of the children. And that education starts even before the entity comes out of the womb. It has to do a lot with how we are calling such souls, and once the Atma is there in the womb, what is being heard? Just imagine what is being eaten is affecting the entity. The sound vibration especially. Imagine an entity that's coming to this world as a mistake or as an accident, now entering into the environment and is hearing abort or get rid or this is no child of mine. This is affecting the consciousness that's being formulated. So no wonder now so many children are so violent because they've been brought by violence. And they are subconsciously aware that they are not wanted. We hear now people talking so much about, you know, people desperate about peace, but it's almost a contradiction. When people are eating violent foods, taking violent drinks, listening to violent music, engaging in violent relationships, honoring violent leadership, dealing violently with the planet or the atmosphere, the ecology, how can embrace peace when practically everything that's being done is about assault and about violence? It's a contradiction. And then at the end of the day, they are so much in violence with themselves because the mind is so much in control and the intelligence, the mind is fighting and the senses is winning the battle. But as we're more peaceful within ourselves, then we can extend that. And that real sense of peace comes with a greater sense of understanding, and it becomes of being more natural, more in harmony. As we go deeper, we realize we are eternal servants of Krishna, and our real sense of harmony is understanding the laws or the science that's connected with that. And then in conclusion, we talked about Sri Sarangadev as an example. And two examples. One example of a child who was very blessed to have such a wonderful mentor. Ultimately, even though the kid had left the body and was brought back to life, some unusual karma that he was able to still be revitalized after having left the body. And then the power of Sri Sarangadev being so compassionate and so selfless, and just taking this service on the count of being ordered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And therefore he had this amazing shakti of power to be able to bring that person back to life and to give such guidance. So we want to be able to honor this wonderful yoga of bhakti yoga, linking up with ultimate or absolute truth, higher truth, linking up with these universalities we're talking about, and being able to be more genuinely peaceful by being freed of so much of the superfluous or acculturated things that have incarcerated us lifetime after lifetime. So it really starts not when we're just adults, but it has a lot to do with what is going on with our children, which determines what the future will be. So in one sense, we all are such powerful leaders because what each person does is having some influence on someone else, and especially on the children. There's an African, I'll end with this, there's an African proverb, one that says how we have inherited our present from our ancestors, but another proverb that says that we have borrowed our future from our children. So what we do now is determining what we are leaving for our children. And we don't want to leave a situation where we are leaving our kids in bankruptcy. That we want them to have as much or more than we have greater chance for spiritual acceleration. So the choices that we make now will determine what we are leaving for our children, for their growth. ISKCON Founder Chad, the Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sri Prabhupada Ki. So it's a little late, so I won't take questions, but there's prasadam out for everybody.